comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it is the show where you matter. Don't forget, if you have not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, our free weekly newsletter, be sure you do. There's really no reason not to, because it's free and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And there's really no reason why you ought to be sitting in the dark. And you are sitting in the dark if you're not receiving the K-Files e-zine. You can subscribe by going to my website, and the website is kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see the link that says K-Files. Also, if you're not a member, why not? It's 23 cents a day. 23 freaking cents a day. And for 23 cents, go to the store with 23 cents and see what you can buy. Nothing. Maybe a pack of gum. Maybe. No, I don't think you can even buy a pack of gum for that anymore. Anyway, for that 23 cents, you get our members area. That means you get to see the show. You get to see the latest show. You get into our video galaxy, our library, our chat, our forums, lots and lots of stuff for you in the members area. 23 cents, you can't spend it any better. March the 13th, I will be speaking in Tucson at the MUFON meeting. So if you're in the Tucson area, or if you're close enough to drive to Tucson, I hope to see you there. And you need to get in touch with Christine Dickey at MUFON, and she'll give you the information about where it's all going to be and how to get there, and I'll see you there. I'm looking forward to it. Now, we have a little bit of a change of plan tonight. I'll tell you about that in just a moment. I'll tell you about it now. We had some cross-ups in communication, and we had to reschedule our guest, Aaron McCullum, but Mike Fortson, whom we wanted to have back on real soon anyway, has agreed to be with us tonight, and we're really looking forward to that, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Very quickly now, I got two emails from people who said, you know, we've heard you recently where you said to someone, okay, we're not going to have any personal attacks. And both of these emails said, you know, I thought you believed in freedom of speech. What's up? Well, I do believe in freedom of speech. I also believe in freedom of action, but you're not free to hit somebody. Okay, there are limits to that freedom. And personal attacks are just like verbally punching somebody. So freedom of speech, yes, you can agree, you can disagree. Making personal attacks? Well, we all get carried away sometimes and say things we probably shouldn't, but we're not going to do personal attacks here because that's just like verbally punching somebody. Okay, so that's the answer to the question. Freedom of speech, absolutely. I believe in it, and we practice it, and we do it civilly. We'll be back right after this. and welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Mike Fortson. Now, you remember Mike. He is the witness to the, we call it the Phoenix Lights incident. That, and he's not the only witness, but he's the witness that was on with us, it was last week, I believe. And just knew so much about what went on with the Phoenix Lights. I got a lot of positive email about him and a lot of requests to have him back on. We're delighted to have him back with us tonight. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Mike, you know, there were so many things. We when you were with us before, there were so many things that we just sort of touched on and moved on because we wanted to get as much in as we could. And then there were some things that we actually didn't have a chance to talk about.
Okay.
And, yeah, and there was an incident with the Phoenix Lights, which, by the way, folks, we're talking about the incident that happened in March 1997. And it was not just Phoenix. There were things happening all over the country, but it came to be known as the Phoenix Lights, and partly, I guess, because such a spectacular, gigantic craft hovered or floated above Phoenix, Arizona, and so many, many, many people saw it. But Mike, one of the things that we didn't get to talk about is a group of police officers and firefighters that were in a training exercise.
That's correct.
And they were witnesses to this, so tell us about it.
Well, this is actually a MUFON report. I got this from one of the MUFON field investigators. It was not Bill Hamilton or Richard Motzer. It was by one of their former reps by the name of Jim Kelly. Jim told me that he had several friends in police and fire rescue, search and mountain rescue. It's kind of when tourists come here and they think they can climb a mountain, and they can, but they can't get down. And they got to go up and get them. Well, about 825 north of Phoenix, and actually a little bit north of Cave Creek, which is even further from Phoenix, but you're starting to get into some little rough area. There was several fire and police rescue. They were practicing their mission. And there was a helicopter and a helicopter pilot present as well. And about 8:25, one of them looked up, and this large boomerang or V-shape or chevron-shaped craft, unbelievable size, just came right over the top of the little mountain. I won't call it a mountain, but it's like a little rocky hill that they were working on. It was only probably 800 foot tall. And this thing came right over the top of it, scared the living daylights out of them for a second because nobody had ever seen anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they stood silently. They watched this thing pass over, and it was as if everybody was paralyzed. And yet one of them said to the pilot, go up and see what it was. And that guy flat out refused to go up. And that's a true story and a true report.
I don't blame him for refusing to go up and see what it was.
Oh, I think that'd be the greatest thing in the world.
Well, you go up then.
There's a million chance, Kevin.
You know something? There are stories down through modern history of airplane pilots that have been told to get up next to these things and find out what's going on, and these pilots didn't come back. So it may be the greatest thing in the world, but I'll have to pass on it.
Yeah. I don't know. I just really want to know more about it. I'd want to see it. It's the once-in-a-lifetime event. It's as if you're looking at something so fantastic. It's just like you don't want to let it pass. You want to be a part of it. You want to go see it. I think I would, but I don't know how to fly, so that's moot anyway.
Well,
I'd just like to have been closer. I'd like to really know what it is, where it's from, what its purpose was. And one thing else is, it was many of these craft, there was more than three, and it was throughout the entire state of Arizona, not just the Phoenix area. The Phoenix Lights is a terrible title. It's not accurate. These things were seen all across Arizona and also into Nevada, Utah, Mexico, Virginia. I mean, I got an email from a lady who drew a picture of one that was in Iowa. So that night was quite active.
All right. Now, let me ask you, let's back up and talk about these cops and firefighters for a moment. Cave Creek, these guys were up around Cave Creek, and Cave Creek is on the north side of Phoenix. It's north of Phoenix. And it's still in the valley, actually just barely. You don't have much further to go to get out of the valley.
You're kind of like on your way up a little bit. It's a little bit higher altitude, not much.
Yeah. But Cave Creek, you're really kind of beginning. You still have desert around you, but you are, as you say, you're it's a little higher up. You're kind of beginning to move up out of the valley.
Right.
So now these firefighters and cops, where are they? Are they actually in Cave Creek or just out of Cave Creek?
My understanding, Kevin, is they were north of Cave Creek.
Uh-huh.
And that's where they practice. It'd be an isolated area or something like that where there wouldn't be, you know, housing, shopping, restaurants, any of that. It would be out in the boonies, so to speak. That's where they do their practice. A lot of people don't even know they're there.
Well, in actual fact, Mike, you know, almost all of Arizona is the boonies. We have more open land. And I say that
out of city limits. There's not normal traffic out there. So, you know, it was kind of isolated in a way.
Well, I say it in a good way. I mean, we just have lots and lots of open area in Arizona.
What makes us, I think that draws interest.
I think so. All right, now, here they are out north of Cave Creek. How many of these guys are in this exercise?
I'm thinking somewhere between 12 and 16. I don't remember the exact number. I've asked for the actual report. Well, you know, I like MUFON and everything. You know, I've got a good relationship with the current people there, Jim and Stacy. But try to find a report is something like that. It was impossible for me to get. So they kind of aren't reluctant to give reports out. I wish I had that report.
All right, now, the thing about this that's important, and folks need to understand this, these are trained observers.
Yes.
Okay? Even the firefighters are trained observers. And what that means is they have been trained to pay attention to their senses and to pay attention to little signals that most people just overlook. For instance, and I'm going to use this example, and you'll see why in just a moment. Most witnesses to anything, if you ask them, okay, well, how tall was the guy? And they'll put their hand up and say, oh, he was about this tall. Did he have long hair, short hair, or no hair? Well, he had medium hair. What color was his hair? They can give you those physical descriptions. And now, ask, was he wearing any jewelry? You know, I don't remember. Did you see any scars on his face? You know, I don't remember. Did you notice any smells? Was he wearing cologne, or did he smell like he'd been smoking? Or, you know, I don't remember. Okay, a trained observer is trained to pay attention to those little things that normally you just wouldn't notice. That means they're looking at fine detail. And that's firefighters as well as police. With police, it has to do with people and suspects and things. With firefighters, you know, a firefighter has to pay attention to his nose. What does he smell when he gets there?
Okay.
I mean, lives depend upon them being trained observers. Now, whenever this thing flew over them, all that training doesn't just go out the window. They obviously would have been able to give us some details that regular, everyday people, observers, but not trained observers, would not have noticed some of those details. Do you know if they filled in the blanks and gave us any of those little fine details?
Not one of them wanted to give their release any information, do any interviews, talk to anybody. And I think the only one for some time was their friend, Jim Kelly, who was a MUFON. And, you know, I played the role of a witness, so everybody knew who I was and they felt free to speak with me and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't belong to a competing organization or anything else because there was Well, anyway, you know, then Jim called me and he talked to me and he told me this report and this story that he knows people that had this thing fly over their heads. They saw it, but they will not. And most of it's just fear of their jobs.
Yeah, and look, what I'm about to say may make them angry, and I don't mean to. I don't intend it that way, but I am an insider in that world. I am a cop, or I was for all of my life. It's inconceivable to me that a guy can not be afraid of a burglar in a building, but he's afraid to talk about this, or he's not afraid to walk into a burning building to rescue someone, but he's afraid to talk about this. Now, that's just inconceivable. It's illogical. And to use one of the favorite lines of Perry Mason, it's irrelevant, incompetent, and immaterial what other people think and what they say about you.
Well, look what happened to Francis Barwood.
Yeah, but that, you know, it's a new day now.
Well, I know, but in 1997, if you talk about this publicly, you know, first of all, other than witnesses, it's very hard to conceive something as large as this was. And the witnesses will tell you, but, you know, that's all they're doing. And if you weren't there and you didn't see, you have no idea just what it did to you. I wish they would talk. It's been 13 years. A lot of people, it took the governor 10 years to come out and say he saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they would, but a lot of them said, hey, it's my pension. I don't want to. You know, it could destroy his career or promotion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they chose not to. And,
And let me say, you would be absolutely amazed if you knew how much of the truth about many things is suppressed because of pensions.
I know. I agree. Mm-hmm. Military, I mean, microchip. Spectrum Astro was the one that built the Misty 3. Last week I told you about this spy satellite that was disabled by the incoming object, supposedly. Drained its batteries. Well, it was built by Spectrum Astro in Gilbert. And they had a hard time telling me about Misty 3 and certain things until I met one of the people whose wife saw it was an 830 witness. And then we all met and we talked, and then that's where I found out a lot of the things I did on the Misty 3. So the numbers are growing, Kevin. I'm really impressed with the numbers. Just like that lady that called in last week from Apache Junction, there was 12 people there.
Mm-hmm.
With her. Mathematically, it just shows the possibility that there are, in fact, going to be thousands and thousands of witnesses who have not yet come forward.
You know, the problem is if they wait too long and they wait so long, it just doesn't matter anymore.
Well, I blame the media for this in the very, very beginning, what the local TV did. This didn't go national until June 18th in USA Today. So between March 14th, let's say the day after, and then going into in June when the USA Today came out, local TV and the main radio stations, I mean, all they did was the giggle factor, make fun of and ridicule the 8 o'clock witnesses. They had the 10 o'clock flare footage, that more than likely flares, I should say. They had that, and that's a high-altitude flare drop. It makes it look like it's on the outskirts of the city. It's not. It's not even in Maricopa County. It's beyond Casa Grande. It is just at the North Tack Range of the Barry Goldwater Range. And those lights, when they ignited, Bruce McAbee said, they'd have to be around 17,000 feet. So there's a lot of misconceptions about the Phoenix lights, and the media fell in love with those videos. And every time they would interview an 8 o'clock witness or a 5:30 witness or witnesses to the large craft or anything, they would always show those videos in the background, and that just confuses everybody.
Yeah, because those videos had nothing to do, because those videos really had nothing to do with what people actually saw.
Well, three of them. Mike Christian, this is my opinion, and I've got all the videos, and Mike Christian's... Terry Proctor and Chuck Reardon's videos are almost identical. Now, none of the 10 o'clock videos did, to me, all were wrong because they did not time and date their cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chuck Reardon said March 13th, 1997, that was it. None of them put the clock on there.
Mm-hmm.
But those three are pretty much alike. Now, Tom King and Steve Blonder's videos are a lot different. They're a finer point of light. They are straight lines. And those two, I say, are more than likely something else. But the others, I mean, it just looks like a plane dropping flares to me. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, to clarify for the audience what you're talking about, and here's what happened. You had, we'll say, the real event that takes place earlier in the evening, and then the 10 o'clock hour, there's like a rushed, hurry up, get up there and drop some flares kind of operation, and then there are videos of that. So like 2 hours after the main event took place.
That's correct.
Okay, but it's those videos of the flare drop, which may or may not actually be a flare drop, but it's those videos from around 10 o'clock that everyone always sees, and then they get into an argument and say, well, I saw it and it looked like flares to me. Well, yeah, because it probably was.
That's
correct. But that's not the Phoenix Lights event.
Well, that's why I, you know, and some of the things that Frank Warren lets me write, and he posts on the UFO Chronicles, I wrote the non-investigation of the Phoenix Lights. My report's there. The truth of the matter is, on these 10 o'clock videos, is no one knows for sure what they are. And that's the reason, is there's no witnesses closer than when Tom King and Bill Hamilton, which Bill Hamilton was MUFON, Tom King was just a really young guy who was very energetic and really into this, and they were at Steve Blonder's house, and Steve Blonder's wife was there, and they were watching a finer point of light. Now, I have Tom's video, and he was chasing the trailing orb. If you look at all these videos, no matter where you look, and they post them of the Phoenix Lights, if you look over a little bit lower and to the left, you'll see a bright white ball.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's paying any attention to this guy. In all the flare footages, in all the videos, period, there's always that trailing orb, that trailing white light that really isn't a part of the flares. And nobody really notices that.
Well, I have, and I've talked about that.
And you can see that for yourself, and you can post them on your website if you like.
Well, I have noticed that, and I've talked about that, and I want to talk about it some when we come back from this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back. We're talking about the event or incident back in 1997 that came to be known as the Phoenix Lights. A most amazing, amazing UFO incident. Craft of gigantic proportions were seen not only all over Arizona, but also in other states that night. But it came to be known as the Phoenix Lights. That's kind of how it's abbreviated these days. We're talking with Mike Fortson. Mike Fortson was a witness, and he's become a very involved witness. He's really dug into all of the various reports from all over the place of sighting of these craft that night, and very, very knowledgeable about what was going on and when it was going on. Mike, we're talking about that trailing orb. I have noticed this. Now, I noticed it not only with the Phoenix Lights pictures, but I've noticed it in other videos and in other pictures when you see a triangle-shaped formation, and maybe it's a triangle craft, usually off to the side and at the back, there is a trailing orb. What's the story with that? Do you know?
No idea, Kevin. No, that is a mystery. I mean, even Tom King did an animation. This kid's really talented, and he did an animation of what Nana and I saw passing in front of us. So the animation would have been the left side, the left wing of the craft. As it passed in front of us, all we got to see really was the left wing of the craft. It was flat, but it was passing right in front of us, incredibly low. And Tom made a video of this, and he made it, and it took him a while, but the animation shows, and even the craft we saw had a trailing orb. Okay, I don't know. It's in all of them, and the witnesses will tell you that. I mean, you just don't know. There was a theory that since so many people saw different colored lights on the craft, they were either red or they were white, but the orbs were red. And there was a theory that maybe it was possible that one of the orbs, or the orbs just had the ability to detach from the craft and do their thing, whatever their mission is or whatever they're supposed to do, and then reattach. And when it pulls out of the craft, it's a white light. And when it goes back into the craft, then it remains the red light. That's just a theory, and nobody's going to know for sure. There's just no way we can say what it is or what it isn't.
You have seen videos, though, and pictures of other large craft and formations, probably, where you have seen that trailing orb. You know, it's not just at the Phoenix Lights. I've seen it in a lot of other videos and photographs from around the world.
Yes. Now, the thing about the Phoenix Lights in those videos, the five videos that were shot around 10 o'clock, three pretty much the same thing, and two possibly something else.
Why do you say it's possibly something else?
There is exact straight lines, perfect straight lines, very fine points of light. Three of the videos were it looks like an illumination flare to me. I mean, once I talked to Dr. McAbee, I read his report, it made sense that they were a diversionary flare drop at 17,000 foot ignition, so they could be seen. Now, you got to understand, only about 20 people saw these as it happened. Once the videos got released, the whole world sees them. But when that actually happened, there was only like 20 people total that saw that.
Yeah, now we're talking about the flare drop.
Hour.
Yeah, we're talking about the flare drop.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There's only about 20 people that saw that. Now, what I was getting at is the technology in 1997. We didn't have a lot of cameras out there that had zero lux. Now, if the orbs were red, then if you had a camera that shot good, decent video in total darkness, then it would show the red. And that's my interpretation of zero lux. And it helps. But the cameras we had in 97, we didn't have cell phones with cameras and stuff like that. There just wasn't good quality video. And the main thing wrong with those five videos was it was not timed and dated. Only one of them had a date. But you need to have the time on the film. And that would have helped solve the mystery. But I think Tom King and Steve Blounder shot something else. I really do. That's my own personal opinion.
All right. Now, these craft that... scratch that. Let me back up and start over here. These things that were something else that they shot.
Yes.
Are these the ones that Jim Dellatoso took a look at and said they may not have been flares?
Okay, I can explain all this. If you saw what you're talking about was on the National Geographic documentary special that just came on. It was on last night, and it was on a week ago, the previous Monday.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I was on the air.
Okay, and Jim Dellatoso said at that point in time, and he did his work on the computers and everything, and he came to a conclusion that Mike Christian's video was not flares. But now keep in mind, he filmed this in June, July, when National Geographic was here. We filmed that in the summer of last year. Okay? Larry Lowe has been doing, I don't know, you know Larry Lowe, sir?
I know the name, yeah.
Okay, Larry Lowe was in the National Geographic special. Larry put the thing together. He knows all the witnesses. He went to Mike Christian's, and he took all kinds of photos, and they did his analysis and everything else. And after he presented his evidence to Jim Dellatoso later that summer of last year, then Jim said then they look like flares. Okay, he changed his story once he was shown more evidence. Now, this can be testified when Jim did Jim Del Toso did the Paracast in December. And if you just go to the last 3 minutes of the show, he'll say right then that Mike Christian's video is flares. So he has said both things, but he came up with new information, new evidence, late last year, and he changed his opinion that more than likely that video, Mike Christian's video, the one that you see all the time, is more than likely flares. I hope I explained that properly.
Okay. Now...
I might have just confused you even more. I don't know.
Well, basically, maybe, but basically what I understand is that all the videos that we see are flares.
Two of them are different. Tom King and Steve Blonder's videos are completely different. I can send you Tom King's video, and you can compare it against the three others. You'll see that they are, in fact, different. And Tom, in the very beginning of Tom's video, he's shooting this trailing orb. He's following this orb on video, and he's not even telling anybody. Then all of a sudden, to the right, you see the camera pan to the light, then all of a sudden the lights are coming on. And when they come on, his lights are a very fine point of light, and they are in an exact straight line. And theirs are different. You can't make those straight lines out of those other videos.
And what time was that video shot?
Right after 10 o'clock. Again, his videos and Steve Blonder's video was not timed and dated.
Okay. So what we're dealing with is just the fact that we're trying to sort out the confusion is proof of the fact that the spin doctors and the cover-up diversionists have been fairly successful. By getting the flare videos out onto the media, and that's what people see.
That's all they see.
Why don't we ever see this one that you're talking about?
I don't know. That's the million-dollar question. I'll tell you what, Kevin, for the last almost 13 years, I've got loaded movie cameras and 35-millimeter cameras always within a few feet of my patio. I mean... I'm ready, but I have not seen anything close. Now, I did send you a video that I shot in 2000 of a daytime boomerang taken at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on December 21st, 2000. If you open it, I sent it to you, and you can look at it at a later time. You will see that that one is, in fact, timed and dated. And I sent you another video I shot, and if you look at the time and date, it was less than 4 hours later.
Okay. Does the news media, to your knowledge, are the news media, are the reporters aware of this video? What's the guy's name that shot this one that you were talking about? You said that he's following the orb and then he pans out and you can see the lights. What's his name?
Well, that was Tom King. He's the one on all the TV shows where he says, "Major sighting here." That's Tom King.
Okay. Are the news media aware of that video? And if they are, why aren't they showing it to us?
Yes, they are. Well, Jim has all of them, I'm sure. I mean, Michael has them all, Michael Tanner. I have them all. I mean, anybody that wanted access to them to look at them, study them, or anything else.
Yeah, but to the best of my knowledge, I've never seen those on television. I've never seen that one.
No, Kevin, I'll send them all to you. I got them all.
I appreciate that. I want to see them. But the point is, the media is, if what I think has happened, then the media is consciously participating in cover-up.
Yes and no. That is true. But they're doing their jobs. They don't want to get caught with eggs on their face, ruin their career. And it does. Jim Schnabel, he was Fox 10 weatherman at the time. He's a witness. He's out walking his dog about 8:25. Up north of town, his name's Jim Schnabel. Anybody listening in the Arizona area, you know, 13, 14 years ago, he's a real nice guy. He's a witness, and I'll tell you what, Francis will attest to this. I mean, this guy just flat out disappeared for like 10 or 11 years. He had moved. I mean, he had resigned from the station or something else happened. He's up in Michigan not doing news, weather, or sports. It does affect those with certain jobs. Yes, sir, it does.
Yeah, but and that's what I'm trying to take on here.
Yep.
look, I have seen this happen, personally know it to happen, where a reporter on the ground reports something straight, you know, no giggle factor, no whatever. It's just report it. And then when that report gets turned in to his editor or to his producer, if it's TV news, it gets all scrambled around. It may not even make it. It may not be published. It may not get to the air. If it does, it'll be all scrambled around with a lot of ha-ha in it. And what I'm trying to get to here is that the news media is run up at the top of this. See, I'm not saying that all the reporters are covering it up. I'm saying that lamestream media at the executive level is run by elitist jackasses.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are all part of this club, and they're participating in covering this stuff up. And I'll make one more statement about this, and then we'll move on. Anybody that thinks there's not a conspiracy in the media needs to go view that video. I put a link to it in the last K-Files of Rupert Murdoch talking about attempting to influence the outcome of elections by the way the news was reported on his stations and in his papers. And so he admits actually attempting to do that.
Doesn't he also own Fox?
Yeah.
Oh, Jim Schneebel worked for Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know...
Hey, we got to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Back, we're talking with Mike Fortson. Mike, when we went away for break, just briefly, the point I'm trying to make here is that people need to be as upset with lamestream media as what we're seeing people be upset with the government right now. They need to be upset with a media that isn't free, because if they're not going to just report things straight, then you can't trust anything they say.
Okay. Part of the reason the media and the television media didn't really have interest in the 8 o'clock witnesses because there was no 8 o'clock video. And producers will tell you that in order to retain viewers, they have to show video while they tell a story. And I'm sitting there saying, you're saying that the people are so illiterate and they can't understand what you're saying without watching the picture. So if you've got a picture in the background of a cement truck and a Cadillac in a collision, and you're talking about a school bus and a Volkswagen, are you telling me the people aren't smart enough to know the difference? And they just will not put the witnesses on by themselves. They have to show the nighttime video.
Yeah, but you know,
Kevin, I want to let you know, I just emailed to you Mike Christian's video, and
okay,
then I compared it with Tom King's video, and they're both in your email box. And you
okay
can look at those, and
outstanding,
there's a difference right there.
But see, they don't apply that same standard, Mike, to other types of reporting. For instance, let's say that, you know, we have a problem with flash floods here in Arizona, and the reason, of course, we don't get much rain. The ground is not very sloped. It's pretty flat, so it doesn't drain well. Plus, just below the topsoil, I mean, just, you know, just a very thin layer of topsoil, and then you have, in many, many places, caliche, which is a very, very hard brick hard clay, and so water doesn't soak into the ground quickly. So we get flash flooding when we get a little bit of rain.
Yeah.
Okay. And
look at Sedona last summer.
Well, yeah. But here's the deal. A car drives off into some place where it's flooded. They don't have video of the car going into that. They go out and they interview. They turn the cameras on and they interview one of the rescue workers trying to get the car out, or they interview one of the witnesses. And you don't have video of the car driving off into the creek. And so you don't have to have video of the craft above Phoenix to take your camera and go out and put your camera on the witness and talk to the witness. So that's my point. They're applying standards to this type of reporting, to this type of story, that they do not apply to any other type of story.
Well, that's correct.
And
I can go as a witness and testify that I saw someone shoot and kill another person.
Yes.
No pictures, no video. My word is enough. My testimony would put this person in jail, or at least it would help because I saw it as an eyewitness.
Mm-hmm.
As an eyewitness to the things that we saw, my wife and I, on March 13th, Thursday night at 8:30, I'll be honest with you, you're held to a higher example. That just ain't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many times people say, why didn't you go get a camera? Well, think about why I didn't go get a camera. You're seeing the impossible, something you've been told all your life does not exist. There it is in front of you. Are you going to waste valuable observation time and go fetch a camera that may have dead batteries and the video may be of your daughter's wedding you're about to record over? You know, you're not going to leave. You're not going to take the picture. It was so immense, so fantastic that people didn't move. They did not go look for that camera.
Well, and you bring up another excellent point. We hear it all the time. Well, you know, why didn't you get a video of it? Okay. How many people around the country every year are eyewitnesses to a violent crime? Lots of them. How many of them run, get a video camera, and take a video of that violent crime while it's happening? Not very many. Zero to none.
Well, nowadays with cell phones, but you go back to 1997, it would be zero.
Mm-hmm.
Today with cell phone cameras, that may change a little bit. But
well, you get a few. Yeah, but even now, you only get a few.
I agree.
And the reason is you're too busy with other reactions that you're having to go get it.
Telling ourselves not to blink.
Mm-hmm.
How often in your life have you ever told yourself not to blink?
Well, once or twice, but I was looking through the sights on my gun at somebody.
Oh, okay. Well, I can understand that then, but I mean, we were actually telling ourselves not to blink. I mean, that just shows the impact. So you don't even think about a camera. I use the term our feet were frozen to the ground. We didn't bother to yell for a neighbor. We didn't bother to scream. We didn't do anything. We were just staring at this thing in disbelief. I mean, it's one of those things, a one in a million chance. And you know, the TV people, they just can't understand this. They've never seen it themselves. They have no idea, no concept. They're very careful of what events they talk about. Nobody will talk about 5:30 in Crown King, where the three objects pancaked on top of each other, formed a white ball of light, and vanished. They're in the producer in the world will touch that story. Maybe Japan, but nobody.
But,
will touch
and
it.
And how many witnesses were there?
Nobody, sir.
How many witnesses to that were there?
I believe the number was 16. This wasn't a late disclosure. This was an early on disclosure, but it threw off the timeline. They tried to simplify the timeline, coming through Kingman, Paulden, down through Prescott Valley into, you know, Tim Lee's area, Cave Creek, and through Phoenix, down by Tucson, and then back up. They had one craft, one string, one light. You know, it was all one event. Well, that's not really true. There are multiple events in this. And that's why I call it the massive UFO flyover of Arizona, because it was statewide. But as far as I know, to answer your question, 16.
So we have 16 solid citizens. These are people that get up and go to work every day.
They pulled off the interstate and got out of their cars to watch this.
Yeah. So here they are. You could put 12 at a time on a jury they would be okay for a jury to decide whether someone's guilty or not, and to decide whether the death penalty should apply or not in certain cases. But they're not good enough to make the news.
That's correct. That story, when you tell a story where an object changed shape, the three large V-shaped craft, two fighter jets were coming up from the south, from Luke. As this happened, the three pancaked on top of each other, formed a white ball of light, and then vanished. So, I mean, that's just too much. I mean, that's stuff for the Twilight Zone or wherever they want to put it. It happened. I believe the witnesses. I mean, it's in Dr. Lynn's book. It's in her video. It's in Bill Hamilton's book. It's been out there in reports time and time again about 5:30. If you ever search for the Phoenix Lights timeline, it right there, 5:30, it's there. That is a true report. And we had something change shape, turn into light, and vanish. So they don't want to put that one on TV.
I believe you said because that's too Twilight Zone-ish. And yet these same people report on Washington, D.C. day after day after day. And if there's ever been a looking through the looking glass, and if there's ever been down the rabbit hole, and if there's ever been Twilight Zone, it's spelled Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir.
And they report on that every day.
Yes, they do.
Now, let's talk about Luke Air Force Base. We didn't get into that very much.
I got a copy of the Freedom of Information Act that was submitted by John Greenwald in April 3rd, 1997. John Greenwald, Black Vault. This kid, I think he was like 19 back in 1997 when he started Black Vault. He's got more Freedom of Information Act requests probably than anybody on the planet. And he's accumulated so much. I won't give him credit for that, if you don't mind.
Sure.
But he addressed this to Luke Air Force Base, 56CS/SCBC, whatever that means, Luke Air Force Base. Luke responded to him. I have the exact date right here.
We've only got about 30 seconds left until we're into a break. And I don't want to interrupt this. I want us to get this, okay? Because it's my understanding that Luke Air Force Base stonewalled some people that called and wanted answers. So I'm really interested in hearing what their Freedom of Information Act response was. But we'll get to that when we come back from this break. Folks, don't go away. Let's find out what the Air Force said.
The man Gene Simmons would want to be if he could be a talk host. Here's Kevin.
We are back. Caller, if you'll hang on just a moment, I want to get a comment about Luke Air Force Base. What was their response, Mike?
Well, several things, okay, and I'm going to summarize. I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but they called the response, excuse me a second. The response was, this is your reply, your 3 April 96 Freedom of Information request. All right, and it tells about the mission of the 56th Fighter Wing at Luke Air Force Base is to train F-16 pilots. They are not an air defense base, which means that they do not scramble. They said that we routinely have aircraft airborne at night. Their mission is not to investigate. Three key words here, Kevin: unusual aerial sightings. And they also used, on the evening of 13 March 97, our command posts and other base agencies received telephone calls about the lights that many saw in the sky, keywords again, over Arizona, not just Phoenix, over Arizona. They were involved in three different events that witnesses have come forward. They continue saying, but our staff did not state that the cause was aerial flares. In fact, we don't know where the question of aerial flares comes from.
Wow.
Now, that's true. They didn't say it was flares. What their plane scrambled for was, in three different occasions, three different events, was the large craft had nothing to do with the flare drop at Barry Goldwater Test Range at 10 o'clock at night. Their craft scrambled at 5:30, around 8:20, and again around 8:35. Then you have out in the West Valley two reports you never hardly hear of. One would be another video that was shot by a young man named Scott Montgomery, and then you have the Bill Griner story, the truck driver who said he had his truck down by Luke Air Force Base. He saw two of the red orbs over the base and two fighter jets scrambled with their afterburners ablazing, chasing after the orb.
Mm-hmm.
Scott Montgomery has a video of that.
Outstanding.
Yes, sir. But here's the thing. They won't show this video, and I'll tell you why. And I've written about this. This is one video where it's best seen with your eyes closed. You got to listen to his excitement because he's looking through a viewfinder, not a window that pulls out. He's looking through the viewfinder. He's on the orb. Then he goes to the fighter jet. He goes back to the orb. He's screaming. He's yelling. This video is best heard rather than seen because it's confusing to watch. But I attest to this kid's enthusiasm and his adrenaline rush that he was enduring and what he was getting on film. Although it was bad video, it was fantastic audio. And nobody has ever put that on the air.
Well, if you can get it for me, maybe I will. We'll see what it is.
Well, got a pretty good idea what it is, but...
No, I mean, if you can get the video for me, I can use the audio on the air.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, there was one more thing, a keyword that Luke used in this Freedom of Information Act at the bottom of page 4.
Mm-hmm.
It says, in summary, we have no records to give you, and we assure you that Luke Air Force Base aircraft were not involved in any way with the phenomena reported on the night of 13 March 97. Now, we have witnesses that say otherwise.
Yeah.
So there's parts in there that you can't really, you just got to take it with a grain of salt. If you trust the witness, there were planes, fighter jets.
Mm-hmm.
Fighter jets come from Luke. The other branch is way down in Tucson at Davis-Monthan.
Yeah.
And they're A-10 wing down there. These are completely different. These are F-16s. So there was three events, but we have witnesses.
Okay.
Wait a minute. They were involved.
All right. Our caller gave up and went away. Our telephone number is 623-444-5889. Our toll-free number, 888-223-4599. If you have a question or a comment, maybe you're one of those people who saw something that gets referred to as Phoenix Lights. Maybe you saw something that night back in 1997. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a question. Maybe you have a comment about this amazing event. We're coming up on the anniversary of it. And let's see, what is it going to be on the 13th, right, Mike?
That's correct.
And on the 13th, I'll be down in Tucson speaking. And you're going to be at a conference speaking, right?
That's in April.
Okay. In April.
That's the conference that I think is coming up April 10th. I got this thing. It's called Embracing Contact, the Phoenix Rising Conference. It's going to be in Scottsdale, to Cottonwoods, on April 10th.
Okay. Outstanding. We'll talk more about that in a minute.
I'm going to be talking about the Phoenix Lights, what's happened to me in the last 13 years, what I'm into, some of the videos I've shot. I don't release videos. It's a waste of time to call. Who are you going to give them to, first of all?
Mm-hmm.
If I get anything good, I'll send it to Frank Warren, put on the UFO Chronicles, or I'll send it to Dr. Bruce McAbee in the East Coast.
All right. Telephone caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, guys. This is Ryan in Washington.
Hi, Ryan. How are you doing?
Hi. Well, I'd like to thank you guys for doing the great work that you're doing, and to all the fine guests on the Kevin Smith Show and the audience. And, Mike, if you, keep up the good work, because one of these days you're gonna get to see it again. I have the feeling.
I hope you're right.
Yeah. And, there's one word for the media, and that is mudsuckers.
Yes.
Either that or mushrooms. But
or mushrooms, yeah.
I had a question for you. At 14,000 feet, is that the height that you said that Maccabee said those flares were
17,000. That's not the altitude they were dropped. That's the ignition altitude. There's a difference.
Oh, but down in Arizona, is there a wind current at that altitude?
Well, there can be.
Sure.
Yeah, there can be.
We also got mountains in the way, and that's why most of the people in the Valley of the Sun never got to see those high-altitude flares. There's just mountains in the way and the curvature of the Earth. It's probably 65 to 100 miles throughout the different areas where they were seen. Some people were as far as South Phoenix, and some people were up around Apache Junction and Cave Creek that shot video, too.
Well, the reason why I ask is because, you know, I agree that the flares are a diversion from the real event, and whatever they did, it's obviously working because it's keeping us talking about it. But, of course, that's what I call for my... It's working with me because that was what my question was about. But at 17,000 feet, I looked at De La Tolso's analysis, and to sum it up, what he did on the documentary was that he analyzed every single frame of footage, and the footage of a standard flare shifts up and down like the stock market. It goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And what I found fascinating was that when he analyzed the video of the what people call flares, but he still don't know if they are flares, but it was like a flat line across like...
Yes, well, he called it a histogram.
Yeah, but it was completely different than what a flare would do. Because if we think about flares, they are a flame, right? And flames, I just don't see... I agree that they're a diversion, but how could they possibly get them to appear in the sky in a direct line? And because they're flames, they would flicker, they would shift at the wind... There might have been some other device, but I don't see how they could be flares. I mean, I still think they're a diversion, but there's something else. I don't know what they are, but what do you think?
And that's
that?
A very good point, and nobody actually knows for sure. On some of this, you know, I guess they use Occam's razor. I mean, they just say, you know, we don't have any witnesses close enough that either saw it or shot video to determine exactly, positively, without a shred of, you know, it's flares, I mean, or it's object. There's nobody close enough. And some of the videos are, well, look at it this way. The standard operating procedure of the LUU-2 flare, which is dropped by an A-10 Warthog, is designed to be dropped at 6,000-foot altitude. It ignites at 3,000-foot altitude, and it extinguishes at 500. If you ignite these flares 3 miles up, and they're 60 miles away, that takes away a lot of that there's a lot of distortion. There's dust in the air. There's all kinds of, I mean, we're not looking at being close by. A lot of the things that he compared it to was not 3 miles up in the sky and 60 miles away. So it wasn't a valid, you know, in my mind anyway, it was an identical match. He wasn't comparing apples to apples. And some of the videos are obviously, you know, could be, you know, more than likely flares, but a couple of videos, I mean, man, they got me scratching my head, and I always have been. And I agree with you. It was an intentional diversionary flare drop, no question. It was intentional and diversionary, let's put it that way. And it just happened to have 5 videos of it, and it just happens to be that's all everybody gets to see. Now, I told you about Jim, and I like Jim. And I know
let me say to the caller, hang on, caller. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you want me to...
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Jim, like I said, during the National Geographic show, when he did that analysis was last summer. And since that point in time, Larry Lowe with the Phoenix Examiner has gone to Mike Christian's house. They did all the study and everything, and Jim even said in December on the Paracast, and you can go there, find the Jim De La Tolso interview in December of just last year, go to the last 3 minutes of the audio, and he'll tell you right there that he believes that video is now flares. So... You know, Jim's analysis, then he was shown new evidence, and he changed. So no matter what it is, we still don't know for sure what it is, but it greatly enhances the 10 o'clock events as more than likely a flare drop, diversionary, but it's taken attention away from the 8 o'clock large craft throughout the state.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Stefan from Quebec City.
Hi, Stefan.
Hello. Great show, and Mr. Fortson, I really applaud your efforts in getting all this information together and getting it out to us. It's a fascinating, fascinating thing.
Thank you.
My questions to you are, first of all, do you think that we're ready for contact, let alone disclosure? And secondly, have any Native American groups or Native Americans from the local reserves commented on this and what they thought of it?
Your first question is yes, I believe the American people are ready. I think the people of the world are ready. I think it's our government that's in fear because they've been lying to us for about 65 years about this stuff. I think everybody out here listening, I think, would accept the fact that if something happened, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I think we're ready.
Right on.
About Native Americans, I have an Apache shaman. I've done 3 sweat lodge ceremonies with him. We tried to have a vision. His feeling is they've been watching us ever since the beginning of time. The Hopi tribe up in northeastern Arizona are probably the most fantastic people to talk to. But being a white male, non-Native American, I stand zero chance of ever talking to their elders about this. I think Native American culture is very astute and very aware of what's going on, and I think they accept it. I have not yet talked to anybody that's in the search and rescue that would be a Native American, though, but I'd love to. To Niems, listen, I'd love to. Thank you.
Right on. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Stefan. All right, we have a flash message from Australia. This is from Blue in Australia. Important message, Kevin, to all the veterans of the Battle of Iwo Jima, 65th ceremony. Our blessings go out to you and your families for tomorrow from Australia. And then he's got a question. Did any MIBs, Men in Black, turn up at any of the witness houses after the Phoenix Lights event? Good question.
Yes.
Oh, tell us about that.
Grant, you want to talk right now?
Yep. You have to keep it short and take a breath because we do have calls coming in.
All right, here we go. 2 of them, Frances Barwood, in her interview, she'll tell you there was a guy named Curtis. Curtis was on top of a building. He's a disabled American veteran. He videotaped the large craft around 8:25, 8:30. He videotaped it. Frances was on a radio show. She was a former Phoenix City Councilwoman. He called her. He told her he had video. She went off the air. She said that, you know, you can deliver them anytime at her office. 20-30 minutes later, knock on the door, 2 guys, typical men in black, black hats, black suits, black everything, said they were from Frances Barwood's office, and they came to get the video, and he gave it to them. So, yes, 2.
What colors did the craft have, and was there a glow around the craft?
The craft itself that I saw was black. The reason I was able to see it at 8:30 p.m. is because it came in through the northwest and at very low to the ground. The Phoenix area lights cast a gray background, so that black object came right through it. There was no glow whatsoever. I did not see, as it passed in front of me, the bottom lights. I could just see the left wing of the craft, so I don't know if there was a glow. I didn't notice a glow. That's a good question, though, but it would have been in my report. I just saw the red lights along the side of the craft and the trailing orb, and that it was at arm's length, about 33 inches in length.
All right. Let me give the telephone numbers out. 623-444-5889. That's the main number here in the studio. Toll free throughout the United States and Canada, 888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can use our flash message option. If you are in the USA, if you're in Canada, you can click it and you can use the flash message option and I'll never see it. Our filters will filter it out. Okay, why? Because it's a talk show. That involves the moving of the lips, use of the vocal cords, and the telephone, and I'll even pay for the call. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, it's Haya from Vancouver Island, Victoria.
Hello, Haya.
Hi. You know, I was thinking Mike could probably get more information. The day that the Phoenix Lights supposedly happened, Coast to Coast was running, and we were getting calls, like, we were getting called, like, off the lines constantly.
Yes.
That
yes.
whole night. And yes. I know that Art always tapes his programs all the time. You might be able to get a copy.
I think Peter Davenport already has a copy, and I'm quite sure Bill Hamilton may have had one. That's where the story about the fax that came into American Computer and East Coast, they broke that on Coast to Coast that night. The very first caller from Paulden, Arizona at 8:16 in Paulden, which is north of Phoenix, about 135 miles or so, he called it in. He is a retired Army Major, Lyle Vann. So, yeah, that was all on Coast to Coast. Good call. And I don't know if they keep a 13-year-old tape, but I'm quite sure, and hopefully
I'm
so.
I'm pretty sure Art does keep tapes. I know that you can you should get a hold of him and find out. I'm pretty sure he does have a back collection of them.
And they're probably on YouTube.
He has of Malachi Martin and others that go back to, you know, 96, 95.
Well, also, they're probably on YouTube.
Footage from March 13th as the calls came in. I think that would be fantastic. That's a good,
one.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome, and I'm pretty sure Art will have it. I'm pretty sure. It was quite
I got it written down. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Can you guys hear me?
Good call.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I was talking all through there, and it was like neither one of you could hear me. I didn't know if you could.
I got. It seems like I got a 1 second delay, maybe, and there might be a little bit of interference on this line. I'm not sure.
Yeah. What I was saying is that's also probably on YouTube.
Oh yes, sir, and it is, mm-hmm. And I think it'd be interesting if he does keep those tapes. I think that's interesting. Hopefully, there's people interested that would like to hear it. I think that'd be a great show within itself.
All right, flash message very quickly from the United Kingdom. It says, great show, Kevin, very down-to-earth guest tonight, telling it as it is. I think the media have no other option but to keep quiet about UFOs. They are told not to report about it by higher powers. If you accept the fact that we're under control by government shadows, then you have to try and accept that they control the whole media setup. How many reporters working for big mainstream media will risk their jobs by reporting this stuff? It's just like airline pilots. Most need to keep their mouth shut or loss of their job. Only guys like Larry King get away with reporting it seriously because he's too big to mess with. If a story does surface on mainstream media, it's usually a fun thing at the end of the main news. Yeah, main news being whether Britney's wearing her underwear today or not. Country's airspace being breached by unknown aircraft is not funny. BBC here in the UK are a perfect example of totally controlled mainstream media, and most people here are brainwashed to accept all they tell us. Thank goodness we have your show to get the truth out. All the best, Mike in Scotland. Thanks, Mike.
All right. That was very nice.
Yeah. All right, back to the telephone caller. You're gone. And the telephone number is 623-444-5889 or toll-free 888-223-4599. Well, we'll give this another try. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi there. This is Tony from Norman.
Hello, Tony from Norman.
How are you, sir?
Good.
Good. One thing about Coast to Coast, remember, Art's not there anymore. Art's in Manila. And George Norrie runs the show now.
Yeah, but the issue is, would Art still have the tapes from his shows?
I don't know if you could get in touch with Art.
Oh, yeah, you can.
Show,
You can. I email Art every once in a while.
The show may have. I would guess you'd have to get in touch with, somebody on Coast, like Tom or somebody. The Phoenix Lights. So that did cover a good part of the United States, actually?
Yes, it did.
Was there anything in the Oklahoma area?
Not that I'm aware of. Iowa, Nebraska, Virginia. I guess the best thing to do on that would be go to the National UFO Reporting Center, go to March of 1997, go to the Chevron or boomerang-shaped craft, and that'll be the whole list of all reports throughout the United States.
Right.
There's the archive right there.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate it.
Oh, Tony?
You're welcome.
Yes.
I have, for some reason, I have failed tonight in my duty. I should have called you Terry. Thanks for the call. For some reason, every time he calls, I end up calling him Terry instead of Tony. I don't know why. But that's why I now write these names down as people call in, so I can keep it straight. Yeah, this was a big event. If it had only happened here in Phoenix, it would be a big event. But it was a humongous event because it didn't happen just in Phoenix. It didn't happen just in Arizona. There were sightings all over the United States. As far northeast, which is not too far north and not too far east, but as Virginia. And then also out in the western states as well. Utah, Nevada, etc. All right, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back right after this. We're talking this evening with Mike Fortson, and Mike is probably the best informed witness that I have ever talked to about any event, because not only does he know what he saw and when he saw it and who was with him and what they experienced, but he has studied all of the other witness accounts that he can get his hands on, other witnesses to the same massive UFO sighting. The telephone lines are open, and the telephone numbers are 623-444-5889, or toll-free in the USA and Canada at 888-223-4599. Those of you watching on our TV channel, the telephone numbers are on the screen. And for those of you who are listening, let me give them to you again. 623-444-5889. That's the main number. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can send me a flash message, okay? And you just go to my website and click the link that says flash message, and your flash message will appear on my screen. If you're in the USA or Canada, our filters detect that in your IP address. They then dump those into the delete file, and I don't even see them because we have telephones for you, and I'll even pay for the call. Now, Mike, I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
There are little rumblings, little rumors around that there was an actual UFO crash at Cave Creek.
Yes.
Do you know anything about that?
Not a lot. I'm probably the wrong person to talk to on that. I am aware of it. There was a crash. There was a extraction of the craft. There's witnesses to it.
Now, this was on the same night?
Be the, actually the best person to talk to about that, that event there.
Okay.
I am aware of that, also a crash in Kingman back in the 50s.
All right, now when, yeah, I know about the Kingman crash, but this Cave Creek crash, when was that?
I can't give you an exact date or year right now. I don't have that information. I think it was back in the early 50s.
Okay, so it was not at all part of the Phoenix Lights incident.
Oh, absolutely not. No, no. I mean, that's like I did two speaking conferences in Aztec, New Mexico, and Aztec had a crash there in March of 48. There's been several crashes, but you don't really hear much about them. Just the people investigate them and the circles they're in. And but the Cave Creek crash, Frank Warren, he's a perfect guy for that for testimony on that one.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin, Mike. It's John from Vancouver Island.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hi. Not sure I have a whole lot to say, except, like, what I wonder about is, you know, there's been lots of flybys, lots of close encounters, flyovers, that kind of thing. So trying to imagine what the purpose would be behind that without actually contacting, that's where I get a little frustrated, a little confused, wondering, you know, why would this be going on for so long without actual contact? And I don't know.
Truthfully, I believe if they landed, we would probably do our best to kill the occupants, dissect them, back engineer their ship, make sure it doesn't ever leave. They would be looking for weapons. They wouldn't be looking for cures for disease or cancer. They'd be looking for weapons. I don't really think that. I think the people are ready, but the military and government don't want it to happen. They want to be in control.
Yeah.
I think the purpose of the flyover of Arizona that happened was that they could do it, and that it was incredibly friendly. All the witnesses will tell you just how friendly of an event it was. For something in an enormous, monstrous, massive size as this was, and as low as it was, there was no damage. Nobody got hurt. There was no wrecks. There was no houses' roofs tore off or anything like that. There was nothing. They came right through restricted airspace of Sky Harbor Airport. They were all over the airspace of Sky Harbor Airport. It was because they could do it. I mean, we did nothing to stop them, and we denied they were there, but it was a total friendly event. I hope that answers your question, but I think it's because they could, because it was a friendly event, and they could do it. We couldn't do anything to stop it.
Well, you know, there's a possibility, John, that there's a possibility that the occupants, you know, we tend to think the aliens, and we sort of group them all together in our minds, but apparently they're from many, many different places around the universe, and it could be that this group does not breathe oxygen.
Yeah, okay. So they'd have to wear a spacesuit or...
Well,
not only could they be from another planet far, far, far away, okay, and that, of course, is a possibility, but because witnesses saw the objects change shape from a solid into a white ball of light and vanish at 5:30 in Crown King, I think you need to get the key and unlock the door to possibility that this is a dimensional object or an interdimensional object, and they have ability to enter our world from theirs, and they have the ability to go back into it. There's just too many things that we're just not used to, like how it affected in bright light, and how it went from a solid object to a ball of light and vanished. You know, I don't know how you can explain that. So where it came from, we don't know.
There's also this possibility, based on what you're describing, they may not be vehicles. They may be alive.
Nobody knows.
They may be alive themselves. So you may have been looking at the aliens.
Yes. Nobody knows for sure, Kevin. They really don't. There's no definitive answer on any of this. It's just witness testimony. You try to pull it all together. Everybody has a piece of the puzzle. You're just trying to put the puzzle together, that's all.
Yeah. John, I want to thank you for the call. Interesting.
Okay.
All right, thanks much. It kind of boggles the mind to think that these things may actually be living themselves. They may be alive. Maybe they are not craft as we think of them. Maybe they are alive. Maybe they are living. A guy told me, I want to get your opinion of this, Mike. A guy told me in explaining this, he said, imagine if you came from another planet and you got here to Earth and you saw a turtle. Would you say that that's a craft with something living inside it? Or is it living? And, he said, we may be looking at like something similar to that, that these are not craft, but the whole thing is living.
Well, all I can tell you is what all the witnesses have said, and they use that word craft, massive craft.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about living. I mean, we do have witnesses that were communicated with that night. I told you about retired airline captain Trigg Johnston up in north of Phoenix, up near Cave Creek. At 10:20 p.m. that night, he had the craft pass over his head and his son. They used the word craft. Trigg used the word ship as well.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he could land his 737 on that with no problem whatsoever, and that it had an inside area of over a square mile. People saw lights. Shala Saracen, she saw lights in different levels as the black triangle passed over her head from the east heading west. I'm pretty confident in this one that people use that word craft. They use the living organism thing later in scientific discussion and studies, but at that point in time, Kevin, they used the word craft. That's all I can tell you on that one.
Yeah, and they look like craft to us.
Yes.
But how do we know?
We don't. And how do they change shape like they did at Crown King? See? So mm-hmm. Just more questions.
See, I've seen a triangle. I've seen a triangular craft. But I can't tell you for sure it was a craft. I can tell you that it was triangular shaped. I can tell you it was in the air. It was low. It was gigantic. And it made no noise. And it moved at incredible speed. It went from zero, just sitting there, to vanished in a matter of seconds. Just gone. And I mean, it took off and was gone over the horizon in a matter of seconds. And made no noise. Me and my whole family saw it.
Wow.
So is it a craft? Well, it looks like a craft to me, and maybe it is. Then again, if it's from another dimension, who knows?
What you just said, Kevin, pretty much parallels Ann Baker's story from Prescott Valley. She saw it go from a V-shape to a semicircle, went from red to white, and vanished. And Tim Lee saw it coming in as a semicircle with white lights, and then saw it, I guess as it slowed down, turn back into what he called a carpenter square shape, and the white lights were on the bottom. They had the craft pass over their heads, the Tim Lee family. They were also interviewed on National Geographic.
Well, this one that I saw, this would have been about 1991, 1992, somewhere along in there. It was in Louisiana, and it was not directly over our heads. It was out in front of us. Well, it was actually off to the left of the road and over a field. But if you stop and face it, it would have been in front of us about 100 yards. And then it would have been up about 800 feet. So it was low. Yeah, we were very close. And it was big. It was big. It was bigger than any airplane I've ever seen. And it was absolutely silent, and it was just sitting there. And when it took off, it was absolutely silent, and it accelerated. It's not like it disappeared, just poof, disappeared. It took off. It headed towards the northeast, but it was going so fast that within 3 or 4 seconds, it was out of sight.
Wow. You saw it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller.
Kevin, name Bill from Elgin, Illinois.
Hi, Bill. Bill, we have a break coming up in just a few seconds.
Sort of like going on.
Bill, hang on. We have a break coming up in just a few seconds. Are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Because we're like 30 seconds from break. Let me ask you this. Is this the Bill that runs the radio station that carries our show in Elgin?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I want you to plug your station when we come back, all right?
Okay, will do, Kevin.
Okay. All right, folks, we're going to step away here for a couple of minutes for a break. And, you know, every once in a while, one of our great affiliates calls in. And so we'll be hearing from Bill, and he owns a radio station that carries our show in Elgin, Illinois. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We're on Final Approach. I've got several flash messages that we're just simply probably going to run out of time, and I won't have time to get to them. And I apologize, but they've just come in. If we can, we'll get to them. Let me say this. You want to join us for sure tomorrow night. We have Stuart Swerdlow on tomorrow night. And tonight, we've got Mike Fortson. And Mike, we have Bill from Elgin, Illinois on the line with us. Bill, tell us about your great station.
Okay, hello, and we're back again.
Yeah.
Sorry for that. There's a little bit of your time delay that you have, and mine are pretty much close together. I was just in ending a public service announcement.
Oh, okay.
My comment, if anything, was I wonder if we don't overestimate ourselves. I mean, I went on a cruise sometime back with my wife, and we seen the island where all the goonie birds live, but we didn't once stop to communicate with them.
That's a good point. That's it. Maybe we are the Goonie Birds of the universe.
Well, you know, I've often thought about that. You know, I've claimed in my original report, and the very first, even while it's passing in front of us, I said to my wife, that SOB is a mile long. I said in my initial report, I mean, it was at arm's length, it was over 33 inches at least. Bill, you know, maybe you're right. I mean, what if I was 50% off and it was a half mile long, or 75% off and it was only a quarter mile long? We still don't have anything even close to that in size. I was raised in the Air Force. I'm ex-Navy. Doesn't mean I know exact sizes or measurements. It was the impression that I got as it happened, and that was the first words that come out of my mouth was that SOB is a mile long. I'm a half mile south of Chandler Boulevard and right at basically at this point in time in Chandler, Arizona. And I said the tail of the craft was on its way almost to Ray Road, which had been over a mile away. So I feel in my heart that I was pretty close. You know, I don't have, there's several witnesses that said it. We have a retired airline captain with advanced knowledge who said it had the inside area of over a square mile. We have real estate agents who said the triangle that passed over their heads took over two neighborhoods, which was 2 miles wide. So I feel comfortable, Bill, with my estimate, and, you know, that's just something that we may never know. I don't know. That's the best I can answer your question, sir.
Bill, tell us about your radio station. Tell us the name of your radio station and a little bit about your community that you're in.
Okay, we're on AM 1610 here in Elgin. And we're about 100,000 people in our area right here. Close enough that we were really quite involved with the O'Hara-type incident. Matter of fact, the phones were ringing like crazy. And when I looked myself, the light was red, but the people that was right underneath it, it was white. I mean, all sorts of things that you never heard on the major media networks.
You know what, Bill? Give me a call sometime tomorrow, and let's you and me put together a show and get some of those folks in Elgin to tell us what they saw.
Yeah, we can do that because there was a lot of interesting facts that there's no time for it right now, but nobody would touch. So. Anyway, thank you for letting me jump in there, and I'll let you read some of these flash messages before we run out of time.
Okay. Gentlemen. All right, and thanks, Bill, and thanks for carrying our show on the mighty 1610 in Elgin, Illinois. We appreciate it. Okay, let's see. Do I have time? Yeah, I've got time to get to one flash message anyway. This is from Protokollis Nicola in the United Kingdom. It says, brilliant show. Many years ago, while on holiday in Cyprus, I was watching the night sky when there appeared from nowhere a slow-moving triangular light formation that moved across the sky like a huge shimmering diamond, distorting the nearby stars. Again, there was an orb at one apex of the triangle, as you describe. My overwhelming thought and feeling at the time was that this orb was somehow controlling the whole scenario, like a conductor conducting an orchestra. Eventually, the triangular formation shot away at an amazing speed in a V formation. I would be grateful for your opinions. You know, there were some witnesses that described that shimmering quality as well here.
Yes. Yes. And I think he said it was in Cyprus. I mean, these sightings of this type of craft have been seen all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And not just in 1997 or later, but I mean much earlier.
Yeah.
These are, you know, I'm thank that caller that sent the flash message, but I would be real curious if anybody ever filed a report or anything or just let people know what they saw, because that was a good report right there.
You know, one of the things that, and there may, look, this may be a good thing, I don't know, but one of the things that sort of keeps us from getting it all together is that there are so many different places for people to go report their UFO sighting. And I wonder, and I'm not saying that some of them should shut down and we ought to just have one. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that the function of having that variety is it does split up the information so that we don't have it in one big pile. Do you think there's a possibility of there ever being like some sort of coordinating cooperation between all of those reporting agencies so that they could have one database?
I think we have that now, Kevin. If you go to the UFO Chronicles, Frank Warren's got his site set up for keywords. And if there's ever the words UFO used ever, I mean, it automatically posts to his site. So you go there, and on the left-hand side every morning, I mean, it'll tell you the UFO reports anywhere in the world that day.
Mm-hmm.
And as they happen, as they're reported. So in a way, we got that now with his site.
Well, we certainly do in terms of the current reports, but I'm talking about like the database like NUFORC has and like MUFON has. Do you think there's a possibility that there will ever be like coordination to one database where they put both organizations put all their stuff into one big database?
I hope so. It's a great idea. MUFON's probably more secretive than any of them. Peter Davenport at National UFO Reporting Center, he puts everything in his database. It's by the year, by the month, by the type of craft, the times. You know, I think we got a little bit of it now. It's just not, nobody's in charge of the, you know, nobody's running the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you want anybody to run the ship.
Well, that's true, you know, because once you have the luxury of having like a one-stop shop, you also have the danger of it's a lot easier for that to be infiltrated and controlled.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, and nobody trusts anything anymore. I mean, in all honesty, you can't trust. You know, I won't make that sound bad. You know, I tell people, you know, I'm a veteran and I'm a patriot and I love my country, but I fear my government. And, you know, I just don't want them to be involved. I don't want them to be in charge. I don't want them to be the collector. I don't want their involvement.
Well, and you bring up a point that I make frequently. The government is not the country.
No.
The Constitution is the country, and the Constitution is the country, and most Americans are loyal to the Constitution. But governments come and go. I mean, you know, a little over a year ago, we had a government that was George Bush and Dick Cheney. 8 years before that, we had Bill Clinton. Now we have Obama. Okay, it's not just a name change. It's a government change. And so governments come and go, but the Constitution is what makes the country. And
the Republic stands strong.
I certainly hope we do.
Yes,
we have so far, and I certainly hope we continue to.
Well, I want to. The Giants waking up. I mean, there's no question about that one.
Oh, I think so. I want to thank you for being with us again. It's just amazing the information that you've provided us with, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again. Tell us again about this conference, but do it pretty quickly because we're just about out of time.
Well, the conference is April 10th. It's in Scottsdale. It's called Rising is One, and like I said, it's April 10th. It's at the Cottonwoods. You can go to risingisone.com on the website if you're interested. It's Embracing Contact, the Phoenix Rising Conference. That's the full name of it. There will be four speakers. I'm going to be one of them. I'll be talking about the Phoenix Lights, my involvement, the case, the report, my version of everything. It's my opinion, I should say.
Okay, Mike, stay on the line with me for just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap for tonight. I want to thank you for being here. I thank everyone who called and everyone who sent us a flash message. If I didn't get to your flash message, I apologize most sincerely. We just ran out of time. My friends call me Steeleye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.